Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Supernatural George. I'm Mittens, and today we're going to be talking about Season 7, Episode 7, The Mentalists. Written by Ben Acker and Ben Blacker, and it is their only episode of Supernatural, and directed by Mike Rohl. After going their separate ways a week and a half earlier, Sam and Dean are reunited in a town full of mostly fake psychics who are getting picked off one by one. There are parallels galore, mirrors aplenty between psychic siblings and a pair of psychic siblings who weren't related at all, but I'll save the big chat about that for when we get there. Sam is still hallucinating. Dean finally does get to unburden himself a bit in ways that legitimately reaches Sam, at least for now. Sam's still lying about how bad his hallucinating is, and there's some gritty queer Dean subtext to dig into as well. We also delve into the consequences of all this lying, and all of it is pretty on point for two writers doing a one-off episode. Kinda surprising. Have I mentioned that I really like this episode? I mean, I even included a return to Lilydale in a fic I wrote a few years back, so I'll link that in the notes for this episode too, because why not? Always promote yourself. I know the fandom might not have gone all in on this episode, but I enjoy it, and I'll explain why as we go through it. Hopefully by the end of it, y'all will have a new appreciation for it too. My tag for this episode is only 3 pages long, and like half of it is gift sets of Dean. So it's probably worth delving into because the posts that aren't gift sets of Dean are actually breaking down this episode and why I'm more than normally attached to it for some reason. So let's get right to the then segment. We start out with a dramatic undertone of a chord and Sam sneaking up on Amy. So we get reminded right off the bat who Amy was in a darker context than it's ever been presented to us before. So far, the show has not done a great job of letting us be on Dean's side about this. It's shown us Dean's guilt and everything. It has not shown us the darkness of what Amy was actually doing. This kind of reframes that, or it's trying desperately to. How Sam was attached to her, had his first kiss with her probably, and then Dean talking about how they have to do something about her because she's dropping bodies, and they show that scene where she killed somebody, and then Dean saying he would trust Sam and let her go. Followed immediately by Dean going back and confronting her, sort of emotionlessly, and just killing her anyway, and then lying to Sam about it. Sam questioning Dean, what's going on with you? And then flashbacks to him killing Amy and having nightmares about it, drinking as Sam was like, I know you didn't want to let her go, but it was the right thing to do. Dean drinking again as he's like, you know my motto, I'm here to help. At the end of the last episode, and Sam's like, oh, you mean kind of like how you helped Amy? And then Dean apologizing for that, and Sam being irrationally angry about it and storming off. Which is how we ended the previous episode. Dean really feeling his guilt now. All right, I'll just go off on my own, even though Sam is hallucinating and he doesn't know what Sam's mental status actually is. Dean realizes that, yeah, he could have handled that entire situation better, but really so could have Sam. And Sam just hasn't even bothered to even begin to get in touch with how much Dean has coddled him over all of this and feels righteously justified in his anger. Which brings us to now. 3 people are gathered around a table having a séance. Guy's like rolling his eyes at the drama of this, asking to speak with the spirits that have surrounded them, and he does not buy into this bullshit, but his wife clearly does. Curtains blow a little bit and we hear whispery noises, and they use the Ouija board to contact Uncle Danny. The psychic says it's okay to be skeptical. If you're with us, knock twice. And there's 2 knocks, and the wife is all excited and the husband is still disbelieving of all of this. Can't believe he's here. He's only agreed to this to get information about Uncle Danny's inheritance that they were supposed to get. The psychic, though, relents and is like, of course, I'll need you to place your hands on the planchette with me. And as soon as they touch it, the lights start flickering, and the psychic even looks freaked out. She's hesitant. She takes her hands away and is like, maybe Danny didn't like the question. And the husband is insistent. Tell me where he left those papers. He knows darn well that's my money. And then the fireplace bursts into flames. A couple of light bulbs explode, and the psychic stands up. She like bolts out of her chair. Like, she's legitimately scared now. Meanwhile, the wife thinks this is all Uncle Danny just arguing with her husband. She said, tell him we're sorry. She's like, maybe if we're nice, he'll... And then they all look down at the table where the planchette is moving of its own accord. The woman is starting to get shaken now. She's like, oh my God, Danny? They all start breathing out cold air, and even the husband looks a little freaked out now. The planchette rises up into the air and shoots across the room and into the psychic woman's neck, killing her. And then we cut to the title card. The woman goes splat. The title card goes splat. There's a lot of splat in season 7. After the title card, we cut to Dean walking through a parking lot with a bag of Fat Max barbecue with the angry pig on the sign from season 6, the episode where Crowley meets them and is convincing them they're going to work for him because he's the only one who could get Sam's soul back. I don't know if you remember that place, but that's where we've seen Fat Max Rib Shack before. Dean's checking his phone. No messages. He's not happy about this. Sam has not even attempted to get in touch with him again. Dean picks a car in the parking lot, an old beat-up Dodge with fuzzy dice hanging from the rearview mirror. I guess that's better than the unicorn from his previous car he stole. He gets the car hot-wired and then tosses the fuzzy dice in the back seat. He doesn't care for those any more than he did the unicorn. But the radio comes on. Dean doesn't want to listen to crazy morning radio guy and is about to turn it off when the next segment up is called News of the Weird, and he hesitates. The radio announcer says that people keep getting murdered in the most psychic town in America, Lilydale. And it doesn't say a lot for the town because those people should have seen it coming, which is sort of the plot of this episode, because they are seeing it coming, they just don't know how to stop it. But at least Dean has a case to investigate now. Keep his mind off the fact that he hasn't heard from Sam. In Lilydale, Dean shows up with Fed ID and lets himself into the crime scene. He knows exactly what he's looking for, all the tricks that fake psychics would use, the tape deck with the sound effects of whispery noises, the button on her chair that makes the wind blow the curtains around, and the knob underneath the table that makes the knocking sound. Dean makes a joke, oh spirits, am I going to win the Powerball? And he pushes it and makes it knock. And he's like, I'm going to be rich. And he looks around waiting for a response, but nobody's there to respond or laugh or roll their eyes or anything. All the cops that were there have cleared out. And Sam's not lingering around to just roll his eyes at Dean. He looks kind of disappointed, though. We then cut to the main street in Lilydale, where every single shop is a sign for some sort of psychic reading place. There's a big poster outside for the Lilydale Psychic Festival that's coming up, and Grandma Goldie is one of the featured performers, the woman we saw got killed in the cold open. Dean is inside a cafe called Good Graces, where the special of the day is you. You're so special, Dean. And I won't even talk about the state of bi versus the state of bliss. It says a state of bliss, but the angle when he first sees it says a state of bi. And good graces. We haven't seen Grace since we lost Cass at the beginning of the season. The man who comes over to help Dean to his table is moderately flirty with Dean. We'll give you a free affirmation with every order. Dean has no idea what on earth this guy is talking about, And he's like, yeah, I think I'll source a taco joint, and is about to leave when he hears somebody talking and recognizes the voice. It's Sam across the room, looking through notes on the case. Dean's like, yeah, I'm not surprised you caught this one. It's on every morning zoo in America, because, yeah, that's where Dean heard it. But doubtfully Sam heard it from the morning zoo, probably Googled it or whatever. And Sam hasn't even spoken yet by the time Dean sits down at the table. He still does not want to talk to Dean at all, and is trying to figure out how the hell to get Dean to leave. Dean just starts laying out what he discovered at the scene, that this woman was not psychic at all, and if these people weren't billing themselves as psychics, he would have chalked this one up as dumb and accidental. And he just goes on and on about the town and how it's all fake stuff, but what killed her was some serious mojo. This woman was not capable of that, because they have not encountered a lot of real psychics in their line. Pamela, Missouri are the two that Dean mentions, and we haven't seen them in a while. Dean then leans back and asks Sam how he's been doing. Sam picked up all of his notes like he's ready to clear out of there as soon as he can make his exit without making a scene in the restaurant, when the waiter comes back over and asks Dean for his order. Dean orders pancakes, black coffee, and the man is like, fantastic. You are a virile manifestation of the divine. And honestly, yeah. He just thinks he's affirmating Dean, or possibly even with a layer of flirting with Dean, but Dean is just like looking at the guy like, what? And Sam laughs. And Dean's like, yeah, laugh it up. Make fun of me, Sam. Sam finally begins to speak, and Dean cuts him off. He leans across the table, looking very, very serious. Neither of us are leaving this town while there's still people dying, so you may as well bite the bullet and work with me here. When Sam says, I don't know if I can, like Sam's some sort of beacon of trustworthiness because he's always open and honest about everything in his life with Dean. Like, screw you, Sam. Dean's like, I'm not asking to open that whole can of worms. I'm not even asking you where you've been for the last week and a half. And Sam's like, good. And that's it. That's all he has to say. And Dean's just like, typical. Dean tells him that they should just try and stop the killings. That's it. And that's something that Sam can't really argue with, because that's literally why he's in town. And as Dean's like, okay, good. A woman who's just walked into the restaurant slowly turns around and looks at him like, wait a second. She starts stuttering and is like, oh my God, you're the guys from the... And Sam cuts her off. Oh no, the Winchester guys from a couple weeks ago? No. They're dead. We get that all the time, though. We understand we look like them, but no. She's like pulling out her phone like she's about to call the cops on them, which would be bad either way. Dean assures her that, yeah, those depraved killers got put down like the dogs that they are. Us, on the other hand, we're completely harmless. And she buys into this and just starts laughing. Oh, silly me. If she is a psychic, not very good. Another man who'd been sitting across the restaurant comes over to her and's like, excuse my friend, she's excitable. But he has pegged them instantly as FBI. His excuse is he's Russian. We can spot the law. Mm-hmm. Also supposed to be psychic. Neither of them can tell that Sam and Dean are Sam and Dean Winchester, the guys from TV. But the man correctly deduces that they are there investigating the, quote, tragedies. The man, however, gives Sam and Dean his card in case he can be of any help to them in investigating what's going on, because everybody's terrified, like, why is this happening in our town? And his card reads that he's a spoonbender. He picks up Sam's coffee spoon off the table and rubs it a little bit in his hands and focuses energy on it or something, and then just sets it back down. When they walk away, though, Dean is sarcastically saying, I'm so glad we decided to vacation here. But at least Sam is back on board with the case. He sets all his files back on the table and shows Dean what he's got so far. There's been 2 murdered women so far. Before Goldie, there was another psychic who was killed with her own crystal ball, just like we saw Goldie get killed with the planchette from her Ouija board. But Imelda apparently left Goldie her necklace in her will, and Sam believes that it might be the necklace that is cursed. Apparently Goldie's next of kin is also a psychic who lives in town, so Sam was going to go talk to her. Now that they've got the case cleared up, Sam starts pouring sugar into his coffee, picks up his spoon, and the spoon just bends in his hand before he can even get it into the cup. And he's just irrationally mad at the spoonbender dude, glaring at him across the restaurant, and whispers to Dean, "He broke my spoon." Like, dude, Sam, you can just bend it straight again, and even a bent spoon's gonna stir sugar into your coffee. But it does make Dean give the guy a side eye across the restaurant, like, wow, did he actually do that? And as people who've seen this episode before, we know that guy had absolutely nothing to do with Sam's spoon. They head over to talk to Goldie's next of kin. Unlike the rest of the town that seems to be one long strip mall of psychic activity and just weirdness, this woman lives in suburbia, this completely normal looking house. She comes to the door as they walk up the walkway. She's escorting a friend out. They introduce themselves as FBI, and her friend offers to stay while they talk with her. And she says, no, that's okay, you go. She's just a friend who heard about her grandmother, and she guesses that's why Sam and Dean are there, and invites them in. She's got a suitcase on her coffee table. She just got back into town. She'd been traveling, working conventions, and things like that. Dean tells her, no offense, but you don't look very psychic. She asks, why is that? And he waves around at her completely normal suburban house living room. Where's all the crystals and pyramids and crap? And she's like, I'm off the clock. Also, not psychic. Which is an honestly refreshing bit of truth for somebody to tell. Dean makes a face at that. And she's like, what? It's an honest living. And he's like, interesting definition of honest. She's upfront about it. With them anyway. Maybe not with the clients she sees. She honestly does read people. It's just not woo-woo, it's body language. And then she cold reads Sam and Dean, and everything she says is completely accurate. That Sam is angry, and Dean is stressed. She pegs them as longtime partners who have a lot of tension between them. And honestly, that is true. They've been together since they were kids. And there is definitely a lot of tension. Sam is definitely pissed, and Dean is definitely stressed. And she got that from less than a minute of interacting with them. And they both look slightly deer in headlights at that revelation because they know it's true. She admits that her grandmother didn't get along with her because her grandmother thought she should be going full smoke machine, putting on the full show. But she still believed in all the spirit stuff, even though she was a fake psychic. Dean's like, what, you don't believe? And she's like, what, you do? You believe in ghosts? Funny question for Dean. He just tells her that he's got an open mind. Sam kind of side-eyes him like, are you trying to flirt with this woman? Or are you just totally downplaying our entire lives? It's kind of hard to get a read on Sam on that. Sam interrupts to ask her about the necklace that belonged to her grandmother. And she's like, I don't have it. Everything went straight to the Emporium. She had a deal with them. So at least she doesn't have the necklace herself, if that's the cursed object. Good to know she's not in danger from it. Sam and Dean head over to the Emporium, which basically looks like a pawn shop with a slightly woo-woo angle to it. The guy behind the counter is like, wait. Don't tell me, you're looking for something. Sam tells him they're looking for a necklace. And he's like, ooh, romantic. Like Sam was buying it for Dean or Dean was buying it for Sam or something. So this guy, who actually is psychic, is trying to throw them off, make them uncomfortable. It's clear that they're there investigating these murders. Like, why else would federal agent looking dudes be there? He's got to know. How do you throw off a couple of hunters who are inquiring about the murders? imply that they're a romantic couple. Sam just pushes forward with the photograph showing the necklace, and he says, oh, you do know this is the Orb of Thessaly. He pulls it out of a lockbox in a black velvet-lined box and tells them it's very powerful and very rare. And Dean's like, and probably very expensive, right? He's like, worth every penny. Dean pulls out his FBI badge and's like, we'll be taking the state's evidence discount. And the guy rolls his eyes like, you should have seen that coming on, honestly, you know? Sam's like, a murder investigation. And he reaches for the necklace. And the guy grabs Sam's hand to stop him. And it's like, I give private energetic readings. A loss weighs heavily on you. We're all supposed to be thinking, oh, it's Amy. And then he says, you're angry. And that's undeniable. And then he adds, it's complicated. And boy, howdy is it. He gives Sam his business card. Dean tries to bring up with Sam what Jimmy had said about them. Sam is not going to talk about it. And Dean redirects, well, what is an Orb of Thessaly? Sam looks at the back of it and discovers that it was made in Taiwan. Dean's not at all surprised that it's yet another fake. But unfortunately, that also means it's not the cursed object that's causing all these mediums to die. We then cut to the Spoonbender, relaxing at home with a drink, dumping out an entire bag of silverware on this coffee table to practice. He picks up a fork and rubs it a little bit and manipulates it in his hands and nothing's happening. So he just manually bends it to like a 90-degree angle and then smiles at, oh yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to happen. And that's not how spoonbenders work, dear. But as he's smiling down at it, it straightens itself back out. And he is shocked. We hear the whispery voices again. The lights start flickering. When he looks back at the coffee table, every utensil on the table is now standing up. And the poor man just jumps back like, what the hell? He tries to run to get away, but he starts breathing ice-cold air out. He's lifted up off the ground and made to hover above all of these utensils, forks, knives, and spoons, standing straight up on his glass coffee table. And then he just drops on them. And every last one of them impales him. And he's dead too. The next morning, Sam and Dean walk into the crime scene investigation. And Dean makes his usual joke. Oh, he probably should have bent those with the power of his mind so he didn't like land on them like that. Sam is not responding any better than the empty room did for Dean in the first investigation scene. Sam finds a cop that he's already spoken with about a previous case. He explains the crime scene, chest full of cutlery. Dean's like, okay, well, we're going to look around. Let us know if you get any leads. And the policeman stops him. He's like, yeah, I've got leads coming out my ass. Every psychic in town is offering their theories. The psychic's consensus, though, is that it's either a ghost or some sort of orc that only attacks Russians. Dean comments that policing Lilydale sounds like fun. And the cop's like, yeah, it was either this or Los Angeles. Like he was offered the choice of going to Los Angeles or here and chose here. And Dean's like, yeah, I can see why you'd do that. The only other thing the cop can tell them is that the dead guy had a vision of his own death, cutlery and all, before he died. Dean's interrupted by his phone ringing. He answers it, and it's Melanie, the woman who admitted she was not a psychic. She asks Dean, did you mean it when you said you had an open mind? And she looks scared. She'd just checked her landline voicemail after a while of not having checked it because the only person who ever called it was her grandmother. And Melanie's trying to talk herself out of believing it. She's like, she was always calling me with crazy dreams or signs or whatever. And then she asks, is it true that Nikolai had a real vision of his death? And apparently Goldie did as well. Melanie describes what her aunt said about the vision, that she was in a seance, the lights went out, it got cold. And Sam's like, wait, did she say that? That the room got cold? And Melanie's like, yeah, why? Is that important? Sam and Dean just look at each other because they know that means ghost. And maybe it's because she had been so honest with them about being a fake psychic. Dean is completely honest with her and tells her it's a ghost. She thinks they're nuts or pulling her leg or not being serious. Dean tells her there's fake woo-woo crap and real woo-woo crap. She's like, yeah, but ghosts? Like, she can't believe this. And he's like, yeah, well, there's a lot weirder crap out there than that. But this woman, being smart and good at reading people, is like, okay, so either the X-Files is real or you just stop talking like an FBI agent. Sam is the one to come clean now for the first time, very hesitantly, that they are not FBI agents. And the woman looks at them like, okay, I need a drink. Dean's like, I support that. They're trying to very quietly lay down the fact that Dean is drinking too much all the time this season. But you know what? He hasn't really been drinking that much during this episode. Possibly because he's got Sam there working with him. You know, he's trying to be on good behavior for Sam. As Sam and Dean leave, Dean's like, well, okay, if this is a ghost, it's not the normal average type ghost. This thing's moved all over town. It's not tied to any one location. Sam attempts to rationalize it, that all these psychics in this town, even if they're fake, they've all got tools of the psychic trade, like crystal balls. Any one of those could be connected to the spirit world for real. Like, there's a reason that they're the trappings of even fake psychics. But all it takes is one actual psychic attracting spirits in this sea of fake psychics. Sam said it gets worse than just trying to find one actual psychic in a town of fakes, but a lot of these fakes probably do have just enough talent and actual psychic power to complicate matters. Not all of them are just complete frauds, you know? Dean asks what their next move is, and Sam pats the top of the car and just walks off. He's like, yeah, I'm thinking we split up and canvas. It'll be faster that way. And also, Sam doesn't have to spend any time with Dean that way. And Dean just mutters under his breath because, yeah, he kind of half expected that. He's like, not actually making any progress in getting through to Sam or getting past Sam's anger. We then cut to the woman who was leaving Melanie's house the first time Sam and Dean walked up to her door, who is now wearing her psychic garb and throwing bones on the table to give a reading on, and putting on the full show, even with her fake Caribbean accent. The woman she's giving a reading to is worried that her brother is going back to jail. The psychic is like, oh, no, no, family is only a pain in the ass anyhow. Like, to stay away from her brother. And doesn't that just tie in a little bit to Sam and Dean's issues? After her client leaves, she puts the cash in her cash box and then hears a strange series of noises. And her eyes glaze over white. She hears a horn noise and her cuckoo clock noise and is sucked into a vision. She sees the clock and the vision of somebody coming up to her and strangling her. We then cut to her doorbell ringing, and it's Melanie, but she's brought Dean along with her. This woman is dubious about Dean, a phony lawman. And Dean's like, yeah, because nobody can relate to phony around here. But this woman is like, if you can protect me, I don't care if you call yourself the Pope. Like, whatever gets results. That's the important part. She tells him about the vision. Dean asks her where she had the vision. And Dean looks around the area and spots a tiny camera. They look at the surveillance footage and spot an apparition as the screen glitches. And the two psychic women are just freaking out. Like, what was that, an actual? And Dean's totally cool as a cucumber because he sees this all the time. And he's like, yep, bona fide. It's a ghost. Dean informs them that nobody is actually having psychic visions because he's watching this ghost give them what they believe is a psychic vision of their own death, and then apparently killing the people she gives these visions to. And Dean's like, yeah, till we stop her. Why would she give those visions to somebody and then kill them in the exact same way. It just seems like, why would you give them warning? Teach them what it's like to be a real psychic? But it's mystifying. Dean, at least, finally feels like he's in control of something. Because he might be fake FBI, but he is a real hunter, and this is his milieu, even if the fake psychics don't know about it. Melanie is just staring at the image of the ghost on the screen, and Dean is trying to ask other questions. He's like, you saw the clock, so we know we have time until this happens. We'll figure this out. Melanie swears that she's seen this ghost before, in a photograph at the local museum. We then cut to the Lilydale Museum of Curiosities. Sam and Dean are loitering in one room when a guide comes in leading a group of tourists, and the guide describes his own family's modest gift of psychic abilities. But the museum and the town also celebrates the, quote, embellishers, the frauds. Sam and Dean move on, past a poster into another room describing sibling acts. Amid this huge wall of old photographs and posters of psychic siblings, Sam and Dean focus down on the mystifying Campbell brothers, because that's not a name they're connected with at all, is it? Campbell, their mother's maiden name. But as they're making confused faces at it, they're interrupted by the guide coming in and letting them know that it never ended well for the siblings. The man surmises it's because of the strain of working together or just being around each other so much. But he points out the Campbells, saying that they were the exception because they weren't actually brothers. It was just a cover for their, quote, alternative lifestyle. Sam points out the photo of the Fox sisters and asks for information about them. He describes Kate as being mesmerizing on stage, if not quite troubled in her personal life, but apparently she could levitate objects and foretell people's death. But her older sister, Margaret, they didn't believe was a natural psychic, but who devoted her life to caring for her sister. And Dean sort of tries to laugh her off as just a fake. And the guide defends her and is like, no, she looked after her sister. She cared for her. Sometimes that's an even more important gift. And doesn't that just define Dean's lifelong struggles of caring for Sam with his psychic gifts when Dean had apparently no gift of his own? This man is actually defending that, saying, no, that's just as important. Because that is kind of Dean's true gift, isn't it? He takes care of others. But knowing how this actually comes out, and it was the older sister whose gift was supposedly just taking care of people, who was the one with the actual abilities, he goes on to tell them that the sisters had lived there all their lives and are buried in the local cemetery. Once Sam gets that information, knows where the bones are, gotta go dig them up and burn them, he excuses himself. That was very educational. And he encourages Dean to follow. And Dean takes one last look at the wall of pictures and gives a polite nod to the guide and turns to walk away. But the guide grabs his arm and apologizes to Dean, like, I'm sorry, I don't normally do this during business hours, but... He asked Dean if he knows an Eleanor or an Ellen. She seems quite concerned about you, and Dean tries to laugh it off, but he does know an Ellen who is dead. He apologizes before delivering the next line, but he's quoting Ellen. If you don't tell someone how bad it is, she'll kick your ass from beyond. You have to open up to somebody sometime. Then the guide looks kind of uncomfortable with what he's just done and releases Dean's arm and tries to laugh it off and tells him to remember to visit the gift shop. And Dean's just standing there feeling more shaken than he has this entire episode. That really did sound like something that Ellen would have said to him. It gives him the courage to admit that, all circumstances considered, he did the right thing. Even Ellen is trying to tell him to buck up. even more so than Joe's ghost telling him not to feel guilty about stuff. Dean comes out a moment later, and Sam's like, all right, guess we go dig up Kate. And Dean pulls Sam aside. That was the encouragement he needed to stop pussyfooting around Sam. Enough with just the facts. And Sam stops him. He's like, we agreed. And Dean's like, no, we agreed to work the case. We didn't agree that you could be a dick the whole time we were doing it. And Sam looks at him like all affronted. Dean's like, you're pissed and you've got a right. And Sam's like, damn straight. Dean's like, but enough is enough. Sam's like, says who? I'll work this case, but you lied to me and you killed my friend. And then Sam turns his back on Dean and tries to walk away. And Dean doesn't let him. He's like, no, I killed a monster who was killing people. And if you didn't know her, you'd have done the same thing. And Sam's like, I did know her, though. And Dean's like, yeah, and that's exactly why you couldn't do it. Dean tries to rationalize it for Sam, to give Sam an explanation for it. There's certain people in this world that you just can't. And Sam turns to him like all bitter as hell. Like, don't you pull that shit. If I've learned one thing, it's that if something feels wrong, it's because it is wrong. And Dean's like, usually, yeah, but killing Amy was not wrong. I did the dirty work for you. That's what family does. Sam's still not accepting it. Dean justifies this with, I would have told you eventually when I was sure that this whole waving a gun at Satan thing wasn't going to make a repeat performance, which is entirely rational and sane. Dean just wanted to be reassured that Sam was not about to completely crack open for Lucifer again, because you almost got us both killed. So you can be pissed all you want. You're entitled to be pissed, but quit being a bitch. And then Dean gets to be the one to storm off for once. And honestly, Sam, now you know how it feels. Because you obviously had not been thinking about that. You hadn't looked at this scenario even once from Dean's point of view. You only know your side of the story, and he should have accepted it without question, because that's what a good brother would do, right, Sam? Well, then look at your own behavior. You've offered nothing for Dean to put his trust in. You lied about Lucifer. You just ran off, cut contact, and expected Dean to just sit back and accept that you had control over the whole situation, when the previous episode from that, you were firing a gun at nothing and having conversations with Lucifer inside your own mind. So, you know, little introspection time for Sammy, and he so friggin' desperately needed it. Because again, Dean's not wrong. Maybe he's not 100% right, but he's really not wrong. And we may not have seen Sam squeezing his hand during this episode, but we keep getting reminders that that is something that he has done. And even in the previous episode, the Leviathans made a whole scene about it. It was a big deal. So even if we're not seeing it happen, we know it actually is still happening in there. Even if Sam doesn't want to confront that fact. He thinks he can still wish it away. Later that night in the graveyard, Sam is digging the grave and Dean's just kind of standing there keeping a lookout. And Sam points out he can understand why she's killing them, but why is she warning them in advance? It just doesn't make any sense. As they're about to salt and burn the bones, a ghost runs up and knocks Sam over, and she wonders why nobody is listening to her. Dean flicks his lighter. His lighter won't light. He tells the ghost she doesn't get a vote in this, as she begs him to stop. And Sam is the one who gets a match lit and throws it into the grave. She dives after it like, no, as she flames out. Dean was under the impression that she was diving across her grave to attack him. And he tells Sam, nice timing. Like, you saved my ass. Because as far as they know, this ghost is the killer. She was going to kill Dean, right? No, she literally just wanted them to stop so she could tell them who the real killer is. But they believe that they have eliminated the threat. They got rid of the ghost. They call Melanie And she tells her friend, they got the ghost. It's all safe for you to go home now. She doesn't really want to go back to her house alone. So Melanie invites her to stay at her house for a few days, just until she's feeling better about it all. They go back to her house so she can collect some things to bring with her. But as she's packing up the last of her things, the cuckoo clock strikes, and it's the exact time, 2 a.m., that her vision had taken place at, and she looks stricken. The lights start doing weird things. The horn sounds outside. She looks around, and everything looks exactly as it did in her vision. Melanie's like, it's okay. Let's just get your things and leave. We'll be fine. The fireplace bursts into flames, and Camille starts yelling to Melanie to call them back now. The vision is still coming true. The ghost is still attacking her. Dean and Sam were driving out of town thinking they had solved the problem, and Melanie just panics and is like, tell me what to do. It's still happening. Sam grabs the phone from Dean, and he's like, just give me the phone and drive. And Sam walks her through how to try and save her friend. Sam orders her to run to the kitchen, and as Camille starts to follow her, she comes face to face with the ghost, and Melanie's like, it's here. Sam orders her to keep going into the kitchen, get the salt. After Melanie throws it at the ghost and the ghost dissipates for a moment, she's relieved. She thinks it's problem solved, but the ghost just materializes again. Now they are out of salt. Sam instructs them to get the fire irons, and Melanie and Camille stand back to back, armed with fireplace pokers, waiting for the ghost to appear again. A dresser goes flying across the room and knocks Melanie over. Camille goes running after her to help her, but the ghost comes up behind Camille and kills her in front of Melanie. Sam and Dean get back to the house, too late to help. Melanie comes running out. Dean runs around the car and pushes Sam out of the way and goes running up to her to hug her, to comfort her. The next morning at Melanie's house, Dean's like, I should have known that whole good sister, bad sister was just showmanship crap, because Kate was just trying to warn people about her evil bitch sister. So the whole sibling act front that they put on for the world didn't really tell the truth of their relationship. The one who supposedly had no talent and was just the caretaker had plenty of talent. She just had no charisma and personality like Kate did. And now Kate's out from under her sister's thumb and trying to warn people about the danger of her. And we've burned her bones, so now we don't even have her to warn us about when her sister's going to attack again. And Sam's like, well, Dean, all we can do now is go stop her. And Dean's like, that is just not good enough. So this sibling act that they are paralleling Sam and Dean to, the actual siblings, not the fake siblings who were just using that as a cover and had a great, happy life together because they were a gay couple. These actual siblings, who didn't get along at all, had some issues that sort of parallel Sam and Dean's loosely. Melanie comes down in her bathrobe. She's still crying. She's just been through a horrible tragedy. First her grandmother died, and then her friend was attacked and killed right in front of her eyes. Dean tries to offer her comfort, like, if you need anything from us. And she's like, I need you to leave. And Sam insists, Margaret is still out there. She's still a danger. We need information on how to stop her. Tell us about the attack. Melanie laughs and is just kind of shocked, like, she barely gave a crap about me. She was just single-mindedly going after Camille. The most disturbing part of the attack, though, was that Margaret seemed to enjoy killing Camille. She was smiling through the whole thing. And I'm going to go back and talk about the Fox sisters for just a moment, because there really was a psychic family in that part of New York in the 1800s during the whole spiritualism movement that began up there, who were like the superstars of the spiritualism movement at the time. They were some of the original psychics to promote themselves. There were actually three of them, though, at least. There was a very large family, but Kate was really one of them. And there's a couple of lore episodes, if you listen to the podcast Lore, about the Fox sisters, but also plenty of other information about them online. But they were clearly not these two sisters from this episode, even if they have the same name and the same profession and the same general location. I just think it's interesting how they've taken our lore from our universe and turned it into something very different for the show. Sam and Dean go back to the graveyard to dig up Margaret's bones. This time it's Dean down in the grave digging in broad daylight. He feels naked doing it. Like, it's really wrong to be digging up bones in daylight. They switch positions and Sam's in the grave when they reach the coffin. He smashes it with the shovel. And Dean is all ready. He's refilled his lighter. But there's no bones in the grave to burn. As they walk back to their car, Sam's like, if somebody knew enough to take Margaret's bones, that's some really dark shit. Serious binding magic. Like, somebody's using her ghost as a weapon to kill people for them. Dean's standing at the trunk of his car, emptying his pockets and just tossing stuff into the trunk. And Sam's talking about, like, what should they do? Call Bobby and see what it would even take for somebody to harness the power of a ghost like that. And Dean is distracted by one of the things he's thrown out of his pocket. It's the flyer for the festival. He's like, you know why I wouldn't spend my money on this festival? And Sam just rolls his eyes like, yeah, I can't imagine why you wouldn't spend money on that. And Dean holds up the poster and says, well, because all the headliners are dead. They go back to Melanie's house to ask her about it. And she tells them that after Nikolai died, they asked Camille to take his spot. Dean asks if these were the most popular psychics in town, and is that how they got picked? And Melanie describes their achievements, and, like, her grandmother wrote a couple books, and Imelda was on the Nate Berkus show twice, and they were generally well-liked, but it doesn't really work like that. It's not just a popularity contest. Dean asks, if you had to guess, who do you think that would be next in line to be picked to be a headliner at this festival? And she thinks about it for a minute and she tries to, like, backtrack and not say it out loud, but she looks up at him and is like, probably me? So while Dean had gone to talk to Melanie, Sam went back to the guy in the pawn shop, Jimmy Tomorrow. What a name. I don't know if Jimmy Tomorrow is supposed to be some sort of reference back to Jimmy Novak or Cass. By default, Jimmy Novak is a reference to Cass. Or if it was just some random name they picked, not knowing better. But I sincerely doubt that, considering how well they got Sam and Dean's issues in this episode. Jimmy asks Sam if he's there with his check for the amulet he gave them earlier. And Sam confronts him, kind of hostily, saying, no, I doubt they sell Ashwood altars down at the Gas and Sip. So Sam has spoken with Bobby and found out what it would require to control a dead person like that. And Jimmy's like, okay, yeah, that's valid. Let me see the list of everything you're looking for, and I'll tell you if I've seen it or sold it. And he pulls out a ledger and a credit card receipt and writes down the address of the person he sold an Ashwood altar to. Jimmy looks all contrite and he's like, yeah, it's the least I could do. I just heard about Camille Thibodeau. And Sam just takes the information and walks out without even a thanks or a, yeah, my condolences to you or any kind word for Jimmy at all. Because Jimmy had unsettled him earlier and forced him to poke at his own issues in ways that Sam didn't want to because it made him feel bad. And now that Dean's confronted him over the real source of his anger and his less than appropriate way of reacting to that anger, Sam does not want to confront it with Jimmy the psychic guy who's trying to read him. Back at Melanie's house, Dean's got all the furniture cleared away in her living room and is making a big salt circle in the middle of the floor. And it's like, well, you know, Dean, you could have given her a chair to sit in, you know? Something. Just standing there in the middle of this big furnitureless room. Melanie's like, are you sure that'll work? And Dean reassures her that it should give them long enough for Sam to find the bones and burn them. hopefully. But Melanie asks him a question that nobody's ever asked on this show before. Does it hurt them when you burn their bones? And Dean's like, oh, I've never thought about it before. Just do it, because it has to be done. When he tells her honestly that yes, it probably does hurt them, I mean, they all kind of scream, Melanie replies, good. This is a ghost that has taken so much from her and hurt her so personally and now might be targeting her. Yeah, she kind of wants it to hurt a little bit. And that is something Dean can understand. Sam finds the address and just busts in, kicks the door open, gun drawn, without even announcing himself or even making an attempt at subtlety here, and bursts in on a Lamaze class being run by the woman who had first confronted Sam when she came into the diner at the very beginning of the episode and was worried that he and Dean were the killers that they'd been seeing on the news. And they reassured her, no, they're completely harmless. And now he's gone and completely overridden that by drawing a gun on her and barging into her house, kicking her door down, and asking where the altar is. She's got it set up across the room. She's got like a singing bowl in her hand. And multiple pregnant women and their partners lying on the floor doing breathing exercises. And Sam stutters out, you're not a necromancer. This poor woman's just like, this is a Lamaze class. Sam just sort of apologizes and makes a hasty exit. And everybody else is left to try and bring back the air of calm for this Lamaze class. She just rings her bowl, just like staring off into the middle distance, like, okay, how do I come back from this? But Sam has put all of the pieces together. He calls Dean as soon as he leaves the house and tells him it's the pawn shop guy because he gave him the fake address. Dean tells him to quickly figure out where he hid her bones because the ghost is now at the window grinning in at them. He races back to the pawn shop, but it's closed and locked up. And Sam remembers the business card that Jimmy had given him when he first met him. His apartment is just around the corner. Sam sneakily tries to break in, not thinking that, well, if the guy's store is closed, the logical place that he would be in his home. If any time was the time for busting in a place with your gun drawn, this would have probably been it, as opposed to the pregnant yoga class. But at least he's using stealth this time. Sam spots the altar with a couple of lit candles and the skull in the middle, goes over and picks it up. It's like, dude, there's lit candles on the table. He's not far away. Get your weapon back out, you moron. Too late. Jimmy pulls a gun on Sam from behind and tells him, somehow I just knew you'd be back. Because, yeah, he is actually psychic. He orders Sam to put the skull down. And Sam's just like, okay, yeah, take it easy here. And he tries to hand the skull back over his shoulder to Jimmy and takes the distraction to turn around and punch the guy in the face. He grabs his gun out of his hand, at least, and points it at him. Back at Melanie's, the ghost has disappeared from the window and Melanie's like, is she gone? Dean's like, I doubt it. Yeah, because she's now in the house with y'all. Melanie's like, but she can't get past the line, right? And then all of their windows explode. Back at Jimmy's, Sam's like, nice binding spell. And Jimmy's like, it doesn't matter. She helps me because she enjoys it. I haven't bound her to me against her will. Back at Melanie's, the windows exploding and the wind blowing into the room have destroyed their salt circle. And Dean's like, damn it, I hate it when they do that. He orders her to grab the salt. He's got his shotgun at the ready. But the ghost is already inside with them. Melanie tries to warn Dean, but it's too late. She flings Dean across the room and then sets her sights on Melanie, who at least has a big old crowbar in her hands. Meanwhile, Jimmy is telling Sam that he and Margaret are the same. We're the real deal. Actually psychic. And he displays an awful lot of bitterness about that. Sometimes the real thing just isn't pretty or entertaining enough. Margaret was always bitter that her sister Kate took the limelight and she never was given the same because her act wasn't as good. She wasn't mesmerizing on stage. As Margaret closes in on Melanie, she disappears. Dean has recovered and shot her with salt, but she'll be back. Back to Jimmy, and he's angry that when he shows people what he's capable of, it scares them. So he isn't able to make a living. He's frustrated that he's living in squalor while all these fakes are out there telling people what they want to hear, putting on a show that he fails at because he just can't lie to people the way we've seen even the true talented psychics in this series do. Very first time we ever met Missouri Mosley, she lied to the client through her teeth. She knew the truth that his wife was cheating on him, but she assured him that everything was fine and his wife loved him because that's what he wanted to hear. This guy apparently cannot lie like that, can't put on the show, can't be convincing as a fake psychic that just tells people what they want to hear. Back at Melanie's, she's putting down a salt line across the doorway, and Dean tells her to step aside and stands there with the shotgun pointed at the ghost. And Dean's just like, this is as far as you go. And back at Jimmy's, he tells Sam that she likes working for me because I let her do all the things that we were never allowed to do or never got credit for being able to do. And this conversation for Sam has got to be pushing so many of his buttons. With his personal history, his demon blood, he knows what it's like to have a true psychic gift and to hate it completely. And now that he's struggling with his hallucinations of Lucifer, and he thought he had been able to let go of all of that guilt and trauma from before, and he was happy and content to just believe that was true, and here's this jerk dredging all of that back up for him. Honestly, he kind of needed a reminder just a little bit. It's not just the reminder that, you know, maybe Dean had a right to do what he did to Amy because of the way you tried to minimize and dismiss it and ignore Dean and block him out and lie to him first about the whole situation. It's also all of this specific case pulling up all of that past psychic shit up for Sam and him having to confront all of it at once. Kind of like when you know how much Chuck was involved in their lives, how it really does feel targeted at them specifically, doesn't it, this whole case? But Jimmy tells Sam that he's a real psychic and yanks the gun psychically out of Sam's hand and picks it up and points it back at Sam. Surprise. Just as back at Melanie's house, Margaret uses her real psychic powers to shatter the floor underneath the salt line, breaking it. She apologizes to Dean. Sorry, handsome. And he shoots her in the face with salt. We cut back and forth pretty quickly between these next few scenes of Dean fighting the ghost, runs out of salt shells, picks up a chain, hits her with that. And Sam's asking Jimmy where the rest of the bones are. Sam is completely at his mercy at gunpoint. It's not like he's gonna be able to burn them all, is it? Right? Maybe keep this guy talking? He doesn't say anything, but he does move to the side, blocking Sam's view of another room. And Sam realizes, yeah, he's trying to keep me from seeing where the rest of the bones are. Sam may not be psychic at the moment because, you know, his demon blood powers aren't currently active, but he can read people, just like Melanie can. Sam tries to convince Jimmy that these people do not deserve to die, and Jimmy is offended at that notion. He blames all those other psychics for the fact that he is not as financially successful as them, and he deserves it because he's got the real power. Sam tells him he wants to get back into that bedroom that he's trying to hide from him, and Jimmy takes a shot wide just to threaten Sam to keep him from approaching the room. And Sam uses the distraction as Jimmy looks back over his shoulder at the bones. Sam pulls out his own gun and shoots Jimmy. While Sam gathers up all the bones, Dean is getting clobbered to death by a ghost, just kicked around for spite. He gets everything piled up in the middle of the bed as the ghost finally closes in on Melanie and is choking her when Sam opens his lighter and it actually lights on the first try and the ghost goes up in flames. The next day, Sam and Dean are back at the Good Graces restaurant, as if there wasn't another restaurant in town. Dean never did source those tacos he wanted. Nope, he's happily now sitting back there while Sam tells him about his encounter at Jimmy's. Dean is appalled that the bones were in the bed. He's like, oh, I can't believe he was boning her. Sam just like, oh, God. Dean is very pleased to have made Sam uncomfortable with that joke. The waiter comes over and asks if there's anything else he can get them, and Dean asks for a refill of his coffee and tells the waiter that if he affirmates him, he's going to punch him in the face. Dean does not want to be told he's a virile manifestation of the divine. The waiter looks confused for a moment and finally does realize that Dean is serious and is like, okay, alrighty then. But he's still pretty cheerful when he tells Dean, yeah, coffee coming right up. As Dean is recovering from that encounter, Sam alerts him to the fact that Melanie has just walked in. Dean waves at her from across the room, and Sam stands up to excuse himself, saying, I'm gonna go do something outside. Like, he understands that Dean wants a few moments with her, and Sam is not gonna be a little bitch about it, or taunt him, or whatever. He's just gonna make himself scarce. And that's really honestly quite nice of Sam. Melanie sits down at the table, and she's like, he didn't stick around so I could say thank you. Like, she was gonna thank both of them. Dean's like, oh, there's no reason to thank me. She's like, you saved my life. But Dean is like, yeah, but not your friends. Your friends still died. And he feels like that was a failure. And that's something he's carrying guilt about now. They burned the wrong bones. They were mistaken about what was killing these people. And her friend died because of it. But Melanie explains that Dean didn't send that ghost to kill her, but you did turn around and come help kill it. And it just is all in how you look at it. It's how it's framed for you that determines how you're going to feel about it, Dean. Just like Sam and his issues over Amy, it was a reframing that gave Sam a different perspective on it, and it helped break him out of his anger. Let this help break you out of your guilt. As we know, Dean will continue to carry guilt for the rest of the series because that's just who he is as a person. But it sometimes helps to put things in perspective. She comments that Dean and Sam seem a little better, and Dean's surprised. He's like, you could tell that from just walking over to the table here just now. She's like, well, take it or leave it. You know, it's just her observation. She also assumes that Dean won't be keen to come back and visit again. Not because of her, but because of the whole town. And she understands that this means goodbye. She wishes that they had met on a better week. And Dean's like, I wish I had better weeks. Which, yeah, sympathy there, Dean. He says, but you never know. It's not like you can tell the future, right? Like, maybe he will come back and visit her? She plays along, turns his hand over on the table like she's gonna read his palm. Dean looks curious for a moment. And then she smiles up at him and says, answer's hazy, try again later, like she was looking at a magic eight ball. But it's kind of sweet that she could make Dean laugh like that. And I kind of do wish they had run into her again at some point. She might not be a real psychic, but she is good at what she does. And she's a nice person. And now she knows about the supernatural. Shame they never brought her back. Which is why I wrote fic of it. Outside, Sam actually did have something to do. He's at the trunk of Dean's car, making room for his gear alongside Dean's, and alongside Cass's trench coat in the trunk. Dean walks up and is like, what's going on? Sam's like, yeah, I figured we'd take one car. Dean's like, okay, you still want to break my face? Sam laughs, like, no, not at this moment. I mean, when you spend that much time with somebody else, you're eventually going to want to break their face, even if it's just a temporary fleeting impulse. But Sam's good with Dean right now. Sam admits that Dean was right about Amy. that if she had just been some stranger, that he would not have been able to let her walk away. And he gets why Dean did what he did. You were just trying to make sure no one else got hurt. And you can see the gears grinding in Dean's head like, yeah, dumbass, you're the one I was trying to make sure didn't get hurt. And Sam goes back to his previous occupation of trying to get Dean to open up. He's like, you can't just look me in the face and tell me you're fine, though. You're not sleeping. You drink for the record. And Dean's like, oh, here we go. And Sam's like, just be honest with me. You know, I know I'm have no room to preach on this subject because, you know, Sam has done the no sleeping and drinking for the record thing. But he asks Dean how those are the actions of someone who knows they did the right thing. Dean asks if Sam wants honesty, and he says he does. And Dean just says, I went with my gut. I didn't trust her. But of course, ever since Cass, I'm having a hard time trusting anyone. Dean is still reeling from Cass's betrayal and then tragic death. Dean never got to hash things out with him, never got a chance to make things right with him. And he's trying so desperately to let it go with Sam and let it be okay, to let bygones be bygones and just move on. And Sam has also hurt him. And Dean doesn't say that here. Ever since you lied to me about the whole Lucifering thing, and ever since Cass did this to you, broke your wall, and then disappeared, he tried to make things right, but now here we are in this Leviathan hellscape, and we have no idea what to do. Their lives have not improved meaningfully over the last since that happened. Dean got his cast off, but that's about it. Everything else has gone to shit. He's having a hard time trusting things. Sam hasn't really helped by lying to him, disappearing without a trace, cutting off his cell phone so Dean couldn't track him, making Dean worry about him, not replying to messages. Dean was freaking out, thinking that Sam had just gone completely dark side to Lucifer. So, yeah, Dean's having a hard time trusting things, and Sam, a lot of it's your fault, and he's just too nice to say it to you. Dean's like, as far as how I've been acting, I think it's just because I don't like lying to you. That he was trying to hide that truth from Sam, to protect Sam from himself. And Dean just doesn't like that, even though Sam willingly and most happily lied to Dean. Felt no guilt about it at all. But Sam can understand that. He's lied to Dean so much, and yeah, he feels guilty about some of it, but he's let that guilt go, right? Sam then comes back with, well, if I learned one thing from that museum, it's that sibling acts are tough. Dean breathes a sigh of relief, like, yes, okay, at least we're on the same page again. We're talking. At least we're talking, you know, from the middle of season 6. And it's like, don't compare us to those crazy people. Like, compared to them, we're completely functional people. After they get in the car, Sam's just like, I still want to know how that guy bent my spoon. And I'm thinking, still, it wasn't the guy. It was the ghost who was targeting that guy and probably following him around. And Dean tells him, forget it, Sam. It's Lilydale. Like, it's Chinatown. And then drives off. And that is how the episode ends. So for an episode that I think a lot of people are rather dismissive of, we do get a lot of really good stuff about Sam and Dean personally. And I really appreciate that. Plus, I love Melanie and I wish we had more of her. And overall, it's a perfectly cromulent episode. So, hey, I'll take it. It's season 7. And for as much as I enjoyed this episode and finally getting Sam and Dean back on the same page and the guilt and the issues that had been tearing them apart for the entire season up to this point sort of got some release in the next episode, we're going to be back to pounding on those issues again, as if this was only sort of like a false sense of reprieve for them. Because next week is season 7, episode 8, season 7, Time for a Wedding. And as much as I enjoyed this episode, there's parts of next week's episode that I absolutely love, because Guy the Demon is like one of my favorite demons other than Crowley in the entire series. Gotta love Guy. I'm just, ooh, it does some icky things. So we will talk about that as we get there. Blowing half the episode budget on the title card. Anyway, I think I hashed out their issues pretty much as we went through the podcast. So I will just say that until next week, you can find me on Tumblr, as long as Tumblr hasn't collapsed yet, at MittensMorgul or at SPNGeorge. You can find me on Discord and Blue Sky at MittensMorgul, or you can email me at MittensMorgul@gmail.com. And I look forward to talking to everybody again real soon. And yes, that sort of dates when I recorded this episode, because it's right after we all found out that Tumblr is basically being left to pasture. Most of the staff that had been working on the site have been moved to other divisions at Automatic, and we don't know what that's going to mean short term or long term, but long term, I think it means that Tumblr's probably going to die a slow, sad death. So, time to start thinking about what to do with your archives and making sure you have backups and have saved everything you want to save from Tumblr, because one day we could just wake up and find out that somebody tripped over the plug on the way out the door. So, so frustrating. I live there. I've lived there for like 13 years. I don't want it to disappear, but you know, it's just what it is. Anyway, have a good one, everyone.